equation. Today we're going to talk about living a life of victory. We're in 1 Samuel 15. Let's open our Bibles and our hearts and study the Word of God.
I want to ask you a question before we start. Have you ever faced a giant in your life? I'm talking about giants that are not people, but problems. I was so convinced that that was going on in the lives of many of us that some years ago I wrote a book called Slaying the Giants in Your Life. And I chose 12 of the things that people had told me often seemed gigantic to them as they tried to figure out life. As believers, we need to be reminded that God is with us, even when we are facing giants. The God who helped David defeat the giant that he faced in his day is the same God who lives and supports us when we face giants today. The principles of victory that are found in David's story are transferable concepts into our lives today as well. So as we begin our study in this chapter, I want to take you through the record of what happened to David and kind of set the stage for what God did in his life. And I want it to be a source of great encouragement to us, because before this week is over, many of us in this room will face something that to us is as formidable as the giant was to David in his day. And we need the Word of God to help us. We need to have the strength and the confidence and the courage of David, or we will be victimized instead of victors. So we begin in the first 11 verses of 1 Samuel 17 with the challenge to the living God. The challenge to the living God. 1 Samuel 17 is not just a story about a young man fighting a grown giant. It is a story about the conflict of the ages. It is a story about the battle that has been raging ever since Satan rebelled against God. This confrontation that we're going to talk about is between good and evil. It's between God and Satan. It is the story of a challenge to the living God by the devil and his forces of evil. And it all takes place in a moment's time in the Valley of Elah. It is a place where there is a deep ravine between two giant cliffs. The army of the Philistines was gathered on one side, and the army of Israel on the other. And down in the valley between the two cliffs is the place where the challenge was issued. And that's the place where God's representative and Satan's representative will meet. That's the scene of the challenge. Now notice in verses 4 through 7, the size of the challenge. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. Now the size of this challenge is very clear because we're given all of the statistics. It is the size of Goliath. And the Bible says that he was from Gath, a place, if you remember your Old Testament Bible history, a place where the spies who were sent out by Moses to check out the Promised Land had reported seeing giants. They referred to the giants as the son of Anak, and many years later Joshua would destroy many of the Anakim cities. Interesting, however, is the fact that Joshua left 3 cities standing, and one of them was the city of Gath. Now, the measurements of Goliath are astounding, and I've read so many books about this, and so many people have tried to figure out a way to make this not quite as big as it is. Make Goliath not quite as gargantuan as he turned out to be. The measurements of Goliath are this. He stood 6 cubits and a span, which means he was somewhere between 9'6" and 9'9". Now that would make him at least 2 feet taller than the biggest players in professional basketball. He was a huge man who probably weighed 400 or 500 pounds. Now think of that for a moment. 9'6", 450 to 500 pounds. And he was armed with a brass helmet and brass leggings and a coat of chain mail that weighed 250 pounds. He had a spear and a shaft like a telephone pole. And just the point on the end of his spear weighed 15 to 20 pounds. And in front of Goliath came a shield bearer. Apparently he was to walk out in front to ward off any stray arrows that would come and bother the giant. It was a gigantic challenge. Along with the scene of the challenge and the size of the challenge comes the shout of the challenge. Notice verses 8 through 10. Then Goliath stood and he cried out to the armies of Israel and he said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourself and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." Now, if you go back and study history, you'll discover this is one of the very few times in history that two nations were challenged to decide their disagreements representatively. Rather than wipe out the enemy and lose all those potential servants, the Philistines wanted to settle the fight economically. The fact that they had the giant and the Israelites didn't might have had something to do with their plan. One man would represent one side, another man would represent the other side, and they would fight to the death, and the winner's nation would be declared victorious. And Goliath shouted for Israel to send someone out to fight him, but nobody on Israel's side wanted to take him up on his challenge. Nobody responded. And the seriousness of the challenge is not discovered until we jump down a couple of verses and see that this was going on not just once in a while, but notice in verse 16 of the 17th chapter what it says. And the Philistine, Goliath, drew near and presented him 40 days, morning and evening. Goliath did not offer a one-time threat to Israel. He came every day for 6 weeks, standing in the valley and shouting out his threats. Every morning and every evening, the Israelites had to listen to his taunts, but no one volunteered to fight him. In fact, the giant's challenge began to disturb the soldiers of Israel so much that verse 11 says, "When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid," which may be one of the great understatements of the Bible. Here was this pagan representative of Satan causing the army of God to stand powerless in fear. And I want to stop for a moment and remind you that all of us can feel that kind of pressure on occasion. Sometimes the battles we face are insurmountable, beyond our capacity, beyond any way we can figure out to win them. Let's put ourselves in David's position for just a moment, noticing what we've already noticed about the challenge. In that young man's mind and in that young man's capacity, was there any way for him in his own strength to meet that challenge? Now let's notice the champion of the living God in verses 12 and following. It was going to take some kind of champion to face the challenge of Goliath. No one in Saul's army was prepared to accept this opportunity. Did you notice there were no volunteers? Here comes David. And he has a heart of a champion. He's just a kid. He has all the characteristics that are required of champions, all the same characteristics that we need to have today if we're going to be champions for God and be able to face our giants and be victorious. Let me just give you five of the things that are here, right out of the text. First of all, David was a champion because he was consistent in routine things. Champions are consistent in routine things. Notice what it says in verse 12. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, who had 8 sons. And the man was old and advanced in years in the days of Saul. And the 3 oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to the battle. And the names of the 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the 3rd was Shammah. And David was the youngest. And the 3 oldest followed Saul. But David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. And Jesse said to his son David, take now for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp, and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000, and see how your brothers fare, and bring back news of them. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. So David rose up early in the morning, left his sheep with a keeper, took the things, and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to fight and shouting for the battle. Now you may wonder, what does this have to do with this story? Is this just background information? Oh no. There's no accidental material in the Bible. Did you know that? It's all there on purpose. Everything that's in the Bible is on purpose. And I think what God wants us to see here is a tremendous contrast from the picture we ended up with in the picture we're looking at today. Remember, it was a moment of great glory for David, called out of the sheep pasture, and the horn of oil was poured on his head, and he was anointed as the next king of Israel. 14 years went by before he actually became king. And what does he have to do while he's waiting? He goes back into the fields to watch over his father's sheep. And if we had time to go and fill in some of the empty places, you discover that he also had another assignment. Saul was a melancholy leader, and his spirit troubled him so that he couldn't sleep at night. And they found out that David was pretty good on the guitar, and so they sent David up to serenade him on what they called at that time his harp. It was more like a guitar in today's music world. So here's David's life. He's the next king. He's the king appointed. He gets up every morning and takes care of sheep. The most difficult animal to take care of. Sheep are dumb, and they don't do what they're supposed to do. And David's out there caring for the sheep. Every once in a while he gets a call, David, you need to go play your guitar for the king. And he runs up and plays his guitar. And it says here he goes back and forth from Saul to his sheep. And he doesn't get impressed when he's with Saul so that he can't come back and take care of his sheep. And he doesn't say to Saul, no, I'm a shepherd and I'm not coming up there. No, he handles it all. And then one day his father comes to him and he says, I want you to run an errand for me. He didn't say, I want you to go and enlist in the war. He said, no, I want you to take some sack lunches to your brothers. He's the appointed king. He's the heir of Israel's throne. Watching sheep, playing his guitar, and carrying sack lunches. And you don't see him complaining. You don't see him stopping to argue about it. What you see is his faithfulness in the routine things. David's father told him to take some food to the three boys at war. And I find it interesting that while the three other brothers went to war, David was sent back to the sheep. He had been called to play his harp, but now he's back helping his father. And even though he had been anointed by Samuel and was waiting to take over the kingship of Israel, he was comfortable serving as a shepherd for his father and part-time guitarist for Saul. He refused to violate the routine or jump ahead of God's schedule. When asked to be an errand boy, taking sandwiches to his brothers, David obeyed. I admire him for doing the menial tasks and taking care of the small things. There's a great illustration of David's faithfulness recorded in the first part of verse 20. Look at it and see what it says. So David rose up early in the morning, left his sheep with a keeper. Just stop there for a minute. He didn't even miss the importance of covering his base while he was gone. Oh, could we use some illustrations of that in the Church of Jesus Christ? You know, we don't show up for nursery. We don't get anybody to take our place. We just don't show up. We're supposed to be at an event. We don't come, but we don't think there's anything wrong with us just not showing up. Let them figure it out. No, that wasn't the way David was. David had an assignment. He took it seriously. When God asked him through his father to do something else, he covered the thing he was doing. He got someone to keep his sheep while he was gone, and he went away and did what he was called upon to do. David was faithful to take care of his responsibilities, even in the little details. It must have been thrilling for a boy of his age to run off and see the army. But he didn't use that opportunity of something exciting to excuse himself from the routine things to which he'd been assigned. Oh, I could preach on this for a while. This is one of the great needs of the church. He made sure somebody was caring for his sheep before he left for the battle. And that sort of consistency is always true of great champions. Did you know that? I've observed that as I've watched people. They take care of the little things. It often seems to be the difference between the champion and the runner-up, that they cared for the little things. Champions are willing to concentrate on the details that go unnoticed by others. They are willing to follow the routine even when no one is watching. There's no shortage of people who desire to win, but there's a great shortage of people who desire to prepare to win by being faithful in the routines of life. One of the reasons David was a champion was that he was consistent in routine things. Secondly, not only was he consistent in routine things, but he was challenged by impossible things. Notice verse 22. David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. He's now at the valley of the battle. And then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines. And he spoke according to the same words. In other words, he gave his main speech that he gave every night and every morning. So David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come to defy Israel, and it shall be that the man who kills him..." Now watch, here's the incentive program. "The man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel." Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for this man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him in this manner, saying, "So shall it be done for the man who kills him." In other words, the incentive program that Saul has put into place is what will be done. As soon as David got to the soldiers' camp, he rushed to see his brothers and take them their food. As they stood talking, Goliath made his daily trek to the valley in order to shout the challenge to God's people. And when David heard it, watch what's going on here. When David heard it, he looked around and saw the entire army of Israel running backwards. So David begins to ask some questions. He's just naive enough not to understand what's going on. He's going to figure this out. So he says, "Who is this Goliath?" And he was told that King Saul had promised great riches to the soldier who would take out Goliath. Not only would this champion get great riches, but he would be given Saul's daughter, who was a beautiful woman, as his wife. And he would go off of the tax rolls in Israel for the rest of his life and his family's life. Now, you have to understand, the only reason that Saul ever created this incentive was because he was nothing but a coward. Saul stood head and shoulders above all his army. He was their king. He should have accepted the challenge of Goliath and gone out to meet him in the power and strength of the Lord, just like David did. The God of David was the God of Saul. Can I get a witness? But Saul didn't understand that, because Saul had wasted away his relationship with God, and the Spirit of the Lord had actually departed from Saul. So Saul now was just in the flesh, and he couldn't see how he could possibly conquer the giant, because flesh to flesh, it wouldn't work. He was no candidate to meet that giant in his own strength. And since the Spirit of God was gone, Saul was turned into a coward. So what did Saul do? He tried to come up with some highfalutin payment plan to get somebody to go out and do his job. As we've already learned, Saul's relationship with God was so deteriorated that he was operating in the flesh and had lost his ability to trust in the living God. So guess what happens? David volunteers. He was consistent in the routine things. He was challenged by the impossible things. The third thing we note about a champion is he was committed in spite of ridicule. Oh, how we need to hear this, because anytime you're a champion, anytime you're going to be extraordinary, anytime you're going to go beyond the limits of what most people do, anytime you want to aspire beyond mediocrity, get ready. Not everybody's going to cheer. Not everybody's going to stand up and salute you. Not everybody's going to clap when you walk by. Many times they're going to try to discourage you from what you set out to do. Notice what happens as we read verse 28. "Now Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard David when he spoke to the man. And Eliab's anger was aroused against David. And he said, 'Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left?'" Watch his disdain. "With whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done now? Is there not a cause?" Then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first ones did. Now when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. And then David said to Saul, listen to this, a teenager talking to Saul, the tallest man in Israel, the king. And David said, Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with the Philistine. You've got to see the ridiculous nature of this conversation. And Saul said to David, you can't go up against this Philistine to fight with him. You are just a youth, and he's been a man of war from his youth. And he's also 9'6" tall. I never, ever in my life met a champion who was intimidated by a great challenge. Champions are challenged by great challenges. The bigger the challenge, the greater the energy. And especially if they're walking with the Lord, the greater the expression of their faith and the fact that God is able to do the impossible. When a man decides to be a champion for God, he sets himself up for a lot of heat and a lot of criticism, don't you know?
Yeah, it's lonely at the top, according to some people. And the determination to be first means that you're out in front of everybody else. You're all by yourself. And yet, in the life of the Christian, to be victorious doesn't mean necessarily loneliness and isolation. It means following the principles that God lays out in His Word, and the stories in the Old Testament are wonderful teaching tools for all of this. We'll finish up our discussion of living a life of victory tomorrow when we open our Bibles again to the Old Testament book of 1 Samuel. Well, that's all the time we have for today's teaching. We'll be back tomorrow to conclude Living a Life of Victory, and we hope you'll join us then right here on this great station.
This is Mark Larson. Join us tomorrow as we continue the series Life Wide Open on Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah.